Hello, good morning, listeners. This is the Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dana Lake, your host for the next hour, bringing you this show every Saturday morning at 10 a.m., and we hope you'll remember and join us. We try to cover a wide range of subjects on health, diet, nutrition, lifestyle, and exercise. And I will remind you that the show is streamed through MyVillageGreen.com. And you can go on MyVillageGreen.com for lots of expert advice, information on supplements. I think you'll find it a fascinating site. And you can go green with MyVillageGreen. Now, topics for today, we always talk about news you can use, and I have a medication alert for you on Vytorin, and also some natural health tips that have been proven to work and some that don't work. And then, for the rest of our show, we'll talk about migraines with Dr. Kevin Kelleher, and I think you'll find that very interesting. We'll try to cover as much about migraines as we can possibly cover. Now, let's talk a little bit about Vytorin. I mentioned to you before, and we've talked about this on previous shows, that Vytorin has run into some problems. So what is Vytorin? It is a combination medication that contains civastatin, or Zocor, which is a statin that reduces cholesterol production by the liver, and Zetia, which decreases cholesterol absorption from food and the small intestine. And we have talked about the fact that cholesterol is made by the liver. It's an antioxidant your body makes. It is for hormones. It's the precursor for vitamin D. It makes up a great deal of the dry weight of your brain, your nerve sheaths, and the bricks in your cell membrane. It is critical. If you don't eat enough, you make more because the body needs it. And if you eat too much, you make less. So it is self-regulated. The reason cholesterol goes up in heart disease is that cholesterol is responding to inflammation and injury. It goes into the intima of the cell where it tries to solve the problem and then becomes part of the mass we call plaque. And we've talked about that before. So I'm bringing that up so you can evaluate this study a little bit better. And there has been a lot of debate about the safety of Vytorin in that it has been shown to not only not be effective with lowering cholesterol and with preventing cardiovascular disease, it has actually made it worse. So this study is very interesting. In 2007, there was analysis of 16 studies involving statins, and they did indicate that low LDL levels increase cancer in patients taking a statin. And this newer study, this five-year trial, also found that there were problems with people who were taking Vytorin as compared to those on a placebo. And a significant increase was found in death from cancer than those who took the placebo. So now we have the cancer risk in a number of studies. What we promote for natural support of cardiovascular tissues, CoQ10, polycosinols, magnesium, B vitamins. Now, a few tidbits for you. You can lose weight easily by sniffing, and this is new. If you take time and smell your food when you sit down to eat, and you chew it very slowly to appreciate the flavor and the texture, and you eat hot foods while they're still hot to maximize the aroma and vapors, you'll speed up weight loss. And this actually makes common sense. I think your grandmother told you to slow down and chew your food. And I have always found that that advice that we got has been borne out in studies and both observation and scientific studies. So why would this work? First of all, when you're smelling the food and you're looking at it and you're slowly chewing, those flavors, that enhancement gives your brain a message as to what you're taking in. And the fullness factor occurs more quickly. When we're hungry and we order more than we should and we throw that food down quickly, that's when we get into trouble. So smell your food, appreciate how it looks, chew it slowly, appreciate the flavor, and consume hot foods while they're hot. Cutting calories at breakfast, does it work or not? Well, it doesn't. People who skip breakfast to save calories actually increase their risk of weight gain, and this has been found over and over. This really isn't news, but it's nice when there's another study that confirms it. And this study found that the people who habitually missed the morning meal were four times more likely to be obese. That's four times more likely. We talk about antioxidant foods and helpful foods and things that work. Well, apricots, tomatoes, and watermelon can prevent cancer. So that's adding more of the foods that prevent cancer. They are high in antioxidants. It's kind of easy to remember this way. The brighter and deeper the color, the more antioxidants, and the more pale the food, the less. Now, that doesn't mean that you're not getting something healthy from things like celery and cauliflower. There are wonderful factors in cauliflower that are very important, as there are in broccoli. But if you just are looking at a plate of food, and think how much more interesting it is when you have colorful food to look at. It's much more interesting to eat that. You wouldn't want to eat a plate that had white fish, white rice, cauliflower, and celery on it. And so it is, nature has helped us to get variety and nutrient density by what we see, what we smell, what we touch, and what we taste in the food. Blood pressure. Taming blood pressure with medication. Again, you probably don't think this is new, but studies show that that meditation on a regular basis, you can't do it just once a month, can help lower blood pressure and reduce the need for medication. And even if you take a 2-minute break and slow down and do some deep breathing, that can be helpful. So anything's better than nothing. We always advocate magnesium, CoQ10, a diet high in fiber with good protein. These are the things that help us in many ways, but also with blood pressure. Let's talk a little bit about eyesight. There have been many, many studies showing that certain antioxidants help reduce macular degeneration and also help prevent it. This has been well understood in just another study that showed a significant reduction in macular degeneration by 25%. Now, what's interesting is the nutrients that are used in these protective eye formulas are the same nutrients that also benefit the prostate, the breast, at least with breast cancer protection and prostate cancer protection. They also help with cardiovascular disease. So if you're taking something for your eyes, you're also helping the rest of your tissues. So let's look at Zymogen's EyeSight, and that's a fabulous supplement, and it's not EYE, it's the capital letter I. And Vision Support Plus by Village Green. That's a Pathways product by Village Green. They both contain zinc and taurine and N-acetylcysteine. And that cysteine is sulfur-bearing. And what cysteine does is it scavenges up toxins. It's part of glutathione. And glutathione is our garbage bag of detox. They also have alpha-lipoic acid in these supplements, which generates glutathione, a powerful antioxidant and very important in B vitamin pathways. Also quercetin, my favorite bioflavonoid, because it is not just anti-inflammatory and good for the eyes. It's good for the vessels, good for the cardiovascular system, and breast and prostate cancer protective. It also has an antibacterial, antiviral aspect to it, and it's a natural antihistamine without giving you the drowsiness. Turmeric root extract is in these supplements, and the most popular and the most common, bilberry, lutein, and lycopene. And lycopene is that antioxidant found in tomatoes. And you can get all of this in EyeSight. And the product that Pathways has, Vision Support, has all of these components, but it also has other antioxidant extracts from fruits. Wild blueberry, wild bilberry, cranberry, tart cherry, prune, raspberry seed, strawberry. Also has resveratrol. That's the wine factor, the powerful antioxidant in grapes and wine, resveratrol, and considered anti-aging from animal studies. So these are some very interesting things you can look at. And remember, it isn't just for your eyes. It's for all of your body. Now, B12, we talk about this a lot too, but there was an interesting study on B12 protecting against brain shrinkage. I have talked about this before, but I think it is so important to bring it back up. You know, B12 can be easily depleted by antacids, and many, many people are on them. You really do not absorb B12 well when you're on antacids, and even taking extra orally may not compensate, so we always recommend methyl B12 sublingual. You can get that at Pathways, and it's carried. Many companies carry it. Pathways has their own excellent version, as does Zymogen. Now, what did this study show? They were looking for Alzheimer's risk, and they examined 107 men and women, and it was, you know, a good study. It went on for quite a while, and people were ages 61 to 87, so they looked at them for 5 years, and they assessed their B12 blood test levels, and they did MRIs. And what they found is that those with the highest levels of vitamin B12 were 6 times less likely to lose brain volume as those with the lowest levels of B12. Now, this is not a surprise. Serum B12 is not the best measure for B12. The best measure is methylmalonic acid in the urine. And what we find, if your serum B12 is in the normal range and lower than 600, you have B12 functional deficits, and that sublingual B12 can help. So I hope you've enjoyed the news you can use, and we are going to take a very brief break. When we come back, we'll talk about migraines with Dr. Kevin Kelleher. Hello, welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM. I wanted to let you know that we're here every Saturday morning. This is a reminder because we just started this in the new year. We're here every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. to talk about topics of interest for your health. And right now, I'm very pleased to introduce Kevin Kelleher. Dr. Kelleher is with Executive Healthcare Services. We're going to talk with him about migraines. Welcome to the show, Dr. Kelleher.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, we're happy to have you. First of all, tell us a little bit about your practice in medicine and a little bit about Executive Healthcare Services.
Sure. I'm a board-certified family physician. I've been practicing in the Reston area since 96. We do sort of full-service family care, adults and children. Our Executive Healthcare Services is a bit unique in that we deliberately keep a low ratio of doctors to patients, typically one-tenth of what a usual primary care office has. So it allows us to be more proactive in our care and sort of a little bit more efforts at coordinating care, trying to avoid the typical fragmentation of care that people unfortunately experience today. But from my own sake, migraines have been an interest of mine really since medical school. It's a very, very common problem. And one where you find that most people who suffer from migraines tend not to have a good follow-up or follow-through on it because, unlike other neurologic conditions, it's not life-threatening, and it tends to be recurrent chronic pain problem, and people get very frustrated with the care they receive. So I found that, you know, good primary care docs who spend a little time learning a little bit more about migraines can have a wonderful impact on migraine sufferers and their lives just by knowing how better to prevent things and how to treat them when they do occur.
Yeah, that is so important. And I think one thing that might be helpful to explain to our listeners is, how do you tell the difference between a migraine and a headache?
Sure. Well, that's a great question, and one that doctors are often just as poor as patients are at figuring out. There's a couple simple rules that somebody who gets recurrent headaches can sort of ask themselves. First of all, any headache that is debilitating, you know, what we would rank as moderate or severe, or limits somebody's ability to function, has a really good chance of being a migraine, even if it's not typical. And so one can ask themselves, if they've had recurrent headaches and the headaches limit their ability to function while they have them, and then are associated with either nausea or light or noise sensitivity, there's about a 90% chance, believe it or not, that it is migraine or a migraine variant. So it's pretty significant. It just goes to show, I mean, about 18% of women suffer from migraines, and so basically one in every five women that we know will have experienced migraines in their life, and actually between the age of 30 and 45, about one in four women suffer from migraines. So it is very common, and often headaches that are described as sinus headaches or tension headaches, if they limit their activities and are moderate or severe, and then have either nausea or light or noise sensitivity, there's actually a good chance it's a migraine.
That's wonderful advice, because I think that people do get confused, and I also wasn't aware that it was confusing to the professionals as well. Now, we hear about other kinds of migraines, or I guess a subcategory, such as ocular or even abdominal.
Mm-hmm.
Can you address those, as well as the menstrual migraine?
Sure. Well, migraine, again, is unique in that it's a central brain process. So basically, almost anything that the brain does can present somewhat as part of a migraine, meaning not just light or noise sensitivity, but visual disturbances, numbness, weakness, nausea, senses of tingling. So it's very comprehensive in how it can present. The ocular migraine idea is somebody who has just transient visual disturbances, and again, this is kind of a gray area and one that a doctor really should assess. But sometimes a migraine can start, which basically is an electrical process in the brain, and start to affect somebody's vision and actually never form into a headache. So a person who has ocular migraines might present with less than an hour, and that's very important, of some visual disturbances, either zigzags or loss of part of the visual field. But what's very important is that's actually what we call the aura of a migraine. That's the part where somebody who has regular migraines feels funny for 30 minutes to an hour, either vision disturbances, tingling, and then will present with a typical migraine. That first part is called the aura, and some people will have an aura that is vision and then never develop a migraine, and that's kind of the ocular migraine idea. One that should always be evaluated, because unfortunately there's other things that can have transient visual disturbances.
Well, that's interesting that the ocular migraine is limited. Do people who have ocular migraines also have the similar frequency with regard to obvious classical migraines?
Right. Very often, somebody who is diagnosed with an ocular migraine, you go back in their history and they have had other headaches that were like regular migraines. So those people might have variations, sometimes normal migraines or typical, they call it classical or non-classical, and then at other times will present just with the visual disturbance. The confusing area is when somebody who seems to have never had a migraine history and presents with just a visual disturbance, those will always be one that's a more worrisome scenario until they're evaluated. Ocular migraines are certainly less frequent than typical migraines, but that's where, when you look at their history, it does often seem as though they've had other migraines. Many of us don't like to label ourselves, and so it's very common to talk to somebody who reports a long-standing history of bad sinus headaches, which, when you really delve into it, are really migraine histories from their past.
So it's often not recognized.
Exactly. Some of the numbers suggest that probably 40 to 50% of people who have migraines, and there's actually a national study that showed it might even be higher to 60 or 70%, aren't diagnosed with migraines. Even though they take regular medications for them, they have them frequently enough to warrant even prevention therapies, but they just aren't diagnosed.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the first thing that's done once you've determined a patient does have a migraine. What is the treatment decision tree here?
Probably the most important, both from the patient and doctor's perspective, is how disabling is it? Somebody might have only one migraine every month or two, but when they get it, it lasts 2 or 3 days, they can't function, they can have 2 or 3 days after it where they're feeling out of sorts, feeling depressed, feeling moody, feeling fatigued. So that might be an infrequent migraine, but the disability associated with it is fairly significant. Others, and often adolescents who have migraines, they might have the beginning of a very bad headache, but they can take, you know, 3 ibuprofen, and it's gone in 2 hours, and they're feeling great. So your first is both for the patient and the doctor to assess how much disability is associated with it, the frequency at which they occur. When you read about people who have migraines and how they report what their lives are like around the migraines, the disability associated with it is fairly significant. 9 out of 10 migraine sufferers say they can't function normally during the migraine. 25% miss at least 1 day from work. 50% limits their ability to participate in family activities or social activities. So that's a very, very important aspect of migraine treatment and prevention, of course, if it is significant.
And I had mentioned the abdominal migraines, which really sound like they are a component of the nausea and vomiting.
Well, I didn't address that, but that's a good point. Abdominal migraines actually are much more common. Something called an abdominal migraine are much more common in children. Abdominal migraines or variants of that, something called cyclical vomiting, those have been diagnosed in kids as young as 2 and 3 years old. So there actually is an entity that's a migraine, more often in kids, where it's recurrent episodes of abdominal pain, sometimes with vomiting, and sometimes associated with a headache, but it doesn't always have to have a headache. So there is a difference between something that is an abdominal migraine and the abdominal symptoms of a classic migraine. So that's a good point.
Well, I'm glad you clarified this, because some of this is new information, and I'm sure it's helpful to our listeners. We have just about a little over a minute, and I wanted you to talk a little bit more about treatment, the decision tree, and we'll carry over into the next segment, of course, with more information.
Sure. Well, treatment, it's gone through a lot of change in the last 15 years, and we're really at a point where your initial choice of treatment is to decide just how severe it is. They used to talk about step treatment, start one thing and see if that works and start another. Well, now with the disability associated with it, you really sort of want a full approach to knocking out a headache when it comes. The sooner you treat a headache, you know, within 30 minutes or an hour of its onset, or at that aura, the more likely it will respond right away and resolve. So that becomes a big factor, because a lot of people are reluctant to take their medicines, but they often make it worse by waiting too long. There's a whole gamut of medicines for treating it. Anti-inflammatories can be used. The triptans are the most specific, and that's things like Imitrex and Relpax and Axert. So for knocking out a migraine when it presents, having an acute medication to knock it out is the best path.
And when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about prevention, some of the factors that can trigger migraines in individuals, and what patients can do about those. And we'll also talk about the medication as well. So listeners, please stay with us. We're with Dr. Kevin Kelleher talking about migraines. This is The Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260. I'm Dana Lake. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to The Essentials of Healthy Living, sponsored by Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dana Lake, your host for the hour, and we have been talking about migraines with Dr. Kevin Kelleher of Executive Healthcare Services. And I want to continue that conversation. We've learned about headaches, that when it's not just a headache, when it's a migraine, it's usually because it's debilitating, it interferes with function. There's usually nausea, light noise sensitivity. So we now know the difference between headaches and migraines, and we've been talking about treatment. Dr. Kelleher, can you fill us in a little bit more on treatment, and we want to go into triggers as well.
Sure. I think you just did an excellent review of what you're looking for to consider if you have migraines. The recurrent headaches often have the same pattern, or have some disability. They're often pulsating, but don't have to be, and they do need to have nausea or light or noise sensitivity. Triggers are varied. When you ask a person who has migraines, over 50% of them describe stress as their number one trigger. So that's a whole other area, Dana. I'm sure you could do a whole several shows on. But stress is an important factor, and that is physical stress, emotional stress. Other common triggers are irregularities in sleep patterns, going too long without eating, because as you know, those glucose ups and downs can trigger other hormonal changes, and that often will trigger a migraine for a person. So knowing what your own stresses are, but also reviewing what common stresses are, certain types of foods, aged cheese. There's excellent sites. The American Headache Society has great reviews of that, and Mayo Clinic has good information on that. So then once you've decided that you may have a migraine, focusing on the prevention with the trigger avoidance is very important. When a headache does come, again, you want to assess the severity of it, because not everyone needs multiple medications, but these days the general consensus is drug in the category called triptan, which is Imitrex was the first one out. There's now 8 that are approved. There's rapid acting, there's longer acting ones, Axert and Relpax. And these are excellent because they're very, very specific for part of the process of migraines. And very often when you take a medicine, when you take one of these triptans as the headache is coming on or as you're early into the headache, within 2 hours, a majority of people will get relief, either complete resolution or significant improvement. Unfortunately, the longer you wait to take that, what we call abortive treatment, the less effective it is. And then very often, people will need a triptan along with some other medicine, perhaps an anti-inflammatory like naproxen, or an anti-nausea medicine, something called Reglan gets used a lot for that. So sort of a thoughtful approach, but sometimes you do need to hit it with several prongs at the same time when the headache comes on.
Well, when we need those medications, we need them. And what I do with my patients with migraines, first of all, if they've had these difficult migraines and have not had an appropriate neurological workup, I don't want to work with them because we need to cover all bases. And I think sometimes people think that you can handle everything with prevention when we need to have good diagnostic workups to rule out more serious conditions. But when we go into prevention and we're talking about triggers, I had no idea that stress was that prevalent as the percentages that you gave. But also, some people are, you know, it's the weather that bothers them. That's sort of hard to control. And I know there's lots of controversies about some of the foods. The aged cheeses seem to have gotten the stamp of approval. But it's my routine to give patients a classical headache list, just as we try to clean up the diet, clean up the lifestyle, regular sleep, stress reduction, do it all.
Right.
And then see, it's easier to see then what the triggers are, and it may make their need for medications far less. Some are actually able to not need the medications, and then we, of course, use the nutrients. Magnesium, B vitamins seem to do an excellent job. So what is your advice to people as they're looking at prevention? And I'm also thinking of temporal mandibular joint dysfunction. I'm a dental hygienist by training as well,
sure.
So I always evaluate for that. Structural issues, the fibromyalgia type trigger points.
Right. Well, you certainly know your migraines. That is, it's true. One, there's a lot of other conditions that go along with migraine sufferers. Fibromyalgia, I believe it's as much as 35% of people with chronic migraines are also diagnosed with fibromyalgia. Depression and panic attacks and anxiety disorders correlate with it. And it's probably not causative, but it probably has to do with you know, what I describe to people as our wiring. We might have an underlying predisposition to hyperexcitability. Now, we might be doing that ourselves with our poor diets and our lack of exercise. So I think your focus on that is so important. Most of the things that somebody would do to prevent migraines, we should be doing anyway. We should be getting, you know, better hydration. We should be getting routine, regular sleep. We should have relaxation techniques, even biofeedback things we can do during the day at stressful times. We should be reducing or eliminating caffeine. So that's all very important for overall health. And as a family doctor, you know, I never want to miss that big picture. But all those things can help reduce the frequency or severity of migraines when they do occur. You mentioned the prevention aspect. I mean, those are as important prevention strategies as any, you know, pills or supplements somebody could prescribe. But we're pretty lucky in that research in the last 10 years have supported a lot of natural as well as prescription methods for preventing migraines. You mentioned magnesium. That's exceptional to me. Magnesium is my go-to for almost anything because the body handles it very well. There's some evidence that we don't keep enough intracellular magnesium, even if blood levels were fine. And magnesium also, or magnesium deficit, seems to play a role in fibromyalgia and irritable bowel, so there's often benefits to adding that. Feverfew is another one that has excellent data as a natural way to help prevent migraines. The B2 riboflavin, very good data. And Feverfew, magnesium, and riboflavin are actually all approved by the American Association of Neurology as preventive treatment options. So this isn't just...
Is that new, Dr. Kelleher?
No, that was actually in their summary statement from 2006, includes it on the list, you know, along with all the other drugs and, you know, very, very strong drugs, things like Topamax and... old blood pressure medicines that get used, verapamil that helps with migraines. Those are all excellent as well. And very often, you know, migraines aren't by themselves. So a 40-year-old woman who has migraines as well as high blood pressure and fibromyalgia. You know, there might be some dual benefits to picking certain medications or certain combinations of natural and prescription prevention.
Well, the mention of medications reminds me of an interesting association here. The calcium channel blockers, which are sometimes used, actually, when calcium, and I'm simplifying not for you but for our listeners, when calcium runs intracellularly, which calcium should be more extracellular, magnesium more intracellular, that happens when magnesium intracellular is deficient. And so the calcium, as it was, runs in, and the calcium channel blockers prevent that. But there's some interesting literature that calcium channel blockers being successful is textbook for what is really magnesium deficiency.
That's excellent data. I didn't hear that. I know on the cellular side that, you know, the body tries to keep its own balance, and if you don't give it the right things, it does a lot of weird things to adjust. That's also a great example because magnesium, which is helpful, because basically the only side effect of magnesium is sometimes a little looser stool. So for
right.
these constipation, predominant irritable bowel people with their migraines, and not uncommon to have fibromyalgia, you know, magnesium is a great initial step. And then that's also where you can go into things like the CoQ10, which is very helpful for migraines, but I also find very useful in people with musculoskeletal complaints too, let alone the benefits for heart disease. So I think you have a great approach by trying to look at all the systems together and choosing your supplements.
Well, you certainly are re-emphasizing the importance of the whole body, and I'd like to talk a little bit more about that in our final segment. I wish we had much longer because you've got a lot of information to give us. But listeners, please stay with us. We're going to be right back after the break. You're on The Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green, and we're talking with Dr. Kevin Kelleher. So stay with us. We will be right back. Yes. Hello, welcome back to the show, listeners. It's The Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. And I'm Dana Lake, your host, and this is our last segment of the day. We want to remind you we're here every Saturday morning at 10 a.m., and we hope you will tune in. We've been talking about migraines with Dr. Kevin Kelleher, and he's with Executive Healthcare Services. And I want to give you that website. It's www.executivehealthcareservices.com. I think you'll find it very interesting. He has a practice that allows him to spend time with his patients. Isn't that right, Dr. Kelleher?
Yeah, it's often the thing lacking these days. So it's been a wonderful experience. We've been doing this for 5 years at this point. So far, so good. People seem to appreciate it.
And I know your patients appreciate it as well. With regard to the migraines, we've been talking a little bit about triggers as well as prevention and natural remedies. I know that I had a child years ago who had headaches, treated many places, nothing worked, medicines didn't work, and she was only 6 years old. And the first thing I noticed was that when she closed her jaw, her teeth did not interdigitate. They were edge to edge in a very unusual manner. It was, you know, she was losing teeth. Teeth were coming in. And so she had this bite that didn't permit her jaw to stay in its natural relationship. And we referred her to a dentist who then corrected it very quickly. And that was it. So simple. But not looked at. And sometimes that's why I have enjoyed so much being part of integrative practices in the past. And it sounds like you have the skill of integrating a lot of knowledge as you look at your patients from a primary care point of view.
Thanks. Yeah, I think those are, you know, those are just important aspects of, and as you're referring to, I mean, it is overall health issues. And very often one problem is actually the nidus for multiple other things, either in the short term or the long term. The TMJ issues, something that coincides with that very often is, you know, even sleep apnea. Not all sleep apnea has to do with somebody being overweight, but there's a doctor, a dentist by training, but an expert in TMJ and cranial facial issues, Dr. Elfer, who you might know in D.C.
Yes.
You know, his stories about what he believes, unfortunately, are a lot of teenagers who, when they have braces work done, things like that, the dentists aren't paying the right attention to proper alignment, to the growth that's going to happen. And that does seem to lead to, again, it's a small percentage, but when you're looking at the number of teenagers getting braces, if only 5% of them have trouble, that's a lot of adults with TMJ issues or cervicogenic pain issues. So, I mean, that's an interesting aspect of this that we often do need to step back and take a look at somebody's overall health and what has happened to them even when they were an adolescent.
Absolutely. Orthodontics is where I started my career, and I worked for one of the few orthodontists at that time who paid attention to the where the jaw wanted to be. And if the teeth and jaw aren't agreeing, that's when we get into the temporal mandibular joint dysfunction.
That's a good point. It's not just where it's not just making the teeth look pretty. The jaw does an awful lot, and there's an awful lot of nerves and nerve ganglions, clusters of nerves that are in and behind that TMJ joint.
Well, we have talked a lot about, we mentioned Feverfew, and you mentioned B2 and the importance of magnesium and CoQ10. What about massage, acupuncture, deep tissue work, osteopathic or chiropractic adjustments?
Sure. You know, I think you do find a good population of migraineurs, which is what, you know, we like to call them, migraine sufferers, who have a component of some chronic posterior neck base of the head, that what we call the nuchal ridge, where all those muscles attach to. And sometimes it's even hard to tell what comes first, because sometimes migraines can just present as neck pain. You know, if somebody has moderate to severe neck pain that's limiting their ability to function and they have nausea, that might just be a migraine as well. But on the other hand, there's a lot of people with that is probably their underlying trigger. When those muscles tighten, the occipital nerves pass out back there. So somebody who's knowledgeable in deep tissue work, even just massage in that area, that's also where biofeedback can play a big role, not only in those neck muscles, but general muscle relaxation. Acupuncture can play a big role in this, too. Again, in my approach as a family doc, it's first do no harm. And if you can get a good acupuncturist who's knowledgeable in that, I mean, that can be a great component to maintenance to help prevent them or reduce their intensity as well.
It seems to me that the conundrum that patients face is which modality is going to work for them. The first is acute, get rid of the pain. And then once you've got that pain control, working on the triggers, working on the preventive aspects. And I find that sometimes patients will stick with a modality, whether it's traditional or non-traditional, when they're not getting relief. And just because they've heard acupuncture is great, it works. It may not work for everyone, as, you know, massage may not be the answer for everyone, and orthodontics may not. But I think the difficulty for the practitioner and the patient is finding out which modalities and which practitioners.
No, very, very true. And than we do. You know, sometimes the references we get to go see somebody is, you know, a good friend told us. Now, that sometimes works very well, but sometimes that good friend doesn't have the same problems and background and, you know, biophysical processes we do. So trying to do your research, asking people questions. I mean, when you're seeing a new provider, they should be willing to answer questions for you. And if they're describing something that doesn't make sense to you, it just may not make sense. On the other hand, keeping the focus initially simple, which is, you know, when I say the A, B, C, D, E, which is A for apnea, meaning good quality sleep, B, biofeedback, C, caffeine, reducing it or eliminating, D, diet, a good regular diet, healthy. Again, I'll let you run on that with as many shows about healthy diets, but regular eating every 3 or 4 hours with grazing or snacking, healthy foods. E is exercise, regular, most if not all days of the week, aerobic activity. And even people with arthritis and who might be overweight, you can still do low-impact aerobic activities. A lot of people add F to that, which is just fluids, you know, your 8 glasses of water a day or whatever you advocate, but keeping your hydration up because everything in the body works better when it's well hydrated.
And I think that's an important final message. Sometimes hydration is the biggest key of all, and it is the simplest. Again, we sometimes forget. We're paying attention to all the details, and we haven't stepped back and looked at hydration. So we recommend that people, generally with adults, half their weight in ounces of water, but they don't need as much water if they're eating a lot of vegetables and fruits. And it depends on level of exercise, sipping between meals to the level of comfort, not till they feel bloated or uncomfortable. There's a lot of variance there.
Right. No, that's a good point. I for 15 years now, at the end of my physicals, I'll tell people I give them the 2-week water challenge test that I guarantee that they will feel better if they maintain proper hydration for 2 solid weeks. And I usually say better skin, better hair, better energy, better bowel habits, less aches and pains, because the body just works better when it's hydrated.
Well, that is the best final message, and I thank you for being on the show, Dr. Kelleher. We hope you will come back in the future.
It's been my pleasure. Good to talk to you.
And listeners, thank you for being here. I want to remind you to take care of yourself and at least one other person and go green with Village Green. This is Dana Lake and Village Green wishing each and every one of you good health and a great day.